Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And I'm David Todd from ESPN in Pittsburgh. Dave, it's Eagles week. It's Friday. It's been a long time, it feels like, since the Steelers played a game. It's a big one this weekend.
I couldn't agree more. It seems like it's been forever since they've been on the field. You know, when you get into the bye, you kind of forget that not only do you have the week leading up to the bye, but afterwards too. But it's given me a lot of time to go back through a lot of the Eagles games from this year and look at more film and all. And I've got to be honest, you know, and we'll get into the injury report here. I'm getting a better feeling about this game the closer we get to it.
That's good, because I haven't had a good feeling all week, and I don't know if it's just the fact that I think people, when I say people, I'm talking fans and talking heads in the media, kind of dismiss the Eagles a little bit because of the closeness of their games. And, you know, as I've said, I kind of take it the other way. All the turnovers, I think they've won in spite of themselves, and that's something they can certainly correct. And if they do, I think they're a potent foe, which I know you agree with. But the great thing is we talked about this going into the Raiders game. If they kind of came out of that game reasonably healthy, they could have 53 bodies from which to choose. And it really looks like that's the case. It sounds like they have 53 guys and they can dress the best 46.
Yeah, David, absolutely on that. And I could not be more happier to be wrong about Harrison, with his situation. Him practicing on Thursday for the consecutive day in a row is something that he hasn't, of course, been able to do all off season dating back to really the beginning of the OTA sessions there. So that's huge. Now keep in mind that he has not played a down of football yet. So, and Dick LeBeau did kind of warn during his talk with the media on Thursday that it's really unknown about if both he and Troy Polamalu will play the entire game. But you have to figure with Troy, he has a better chance of playing all whatever 60 whatever snaps on defense, more so than Harrison. It'll be interesting to see if they use Harrison maybe on a series to series basis, if they use Harrison more as a pass rushing specialist or more of a nickel type person there. But I'm not expecting Harrison to play every down on defense. And I think a number around probably, let's say, 25 to 30 snaps is probably more realistic. But when you consider him, when you consider Polamalu, when you consider Rashard Mendenhall all practicing fully again, and Marcus Gilbert really being the only one that's missed practice time this week, as he didn't work on Monday, but he's back working with his groin. This is the healthiest that they've been all season, and we talked about early on in the season how we thought the roster would be kind of a fluid thing with movements and all like that. That's one thing that we haven't seen. We haven't seen any roster moves up until this point.
Yeah, that's a good point. We thought we'd be having guys on the edges of the roster. They finally made the move with DeCastro, and we've talked about the inactives. That'll be another thing. They're going to have five guys who were inactive for the last game who are going to be active this game when you count Harrison Polamalu, Mendenhall, Mike Adams, and
Stevenson Sylvester.
And Stevenson Sylvester, right. So they're going to be five different guys inactive for this game, which we now are getting to the point where when the Steelers made their roster, and we talked about it in the opener against Denver, this is the roster they were hoping to have ready to go for games. And so you got DeMarcus Van Dyke and Robert Golden. One of them maybe sits as the and that's probably Golden, since Van Dyke's been effective as a gunner. And we talked about it's Jonathan Dwyer. It maybe is inactive because they don't dress all the backs. And then the rest of them kind of fall into place with Robinson and Beecham and the like. But it'll be interesting to see. It's the first time they've had to make that decision. And listening to John Dwyer in the locker room this week, he thinks he's going to go. So it'll be That would be the one interesting thing. If they're at all worried about Rashard Mendenhall and think he can't go as much, if maybe they do dress five running backs, although at the end of the day, I got to think that's probably not going to be the case.
Yeah, you have to, I think, look at it from a special teams aspect more than anything. I'd much rather have Baron Batch in on special teams than I would Jonathan Dwyer. Now, of course, you're not going to get anything from Mendenhall on special teams, but, I mean, that you're swapping one starting back for another back there in that case. I would be surprised if Dwyer is active. I think Charlie Batch, of course, is going to be one of your inactives. I think Al Woods is a guy that's down this week and inactive with Sylvester coming back there. So I think I think you hit him there. I think you got Dwyer. I think you have Batch, or Charlie Batch, I should say. I think you have Al Woods. I think you have Adrian Robinson, Robert Golden, Beecham. And I'm missing one in there somewhere.
Adrian Robinson.
And Adrian Robinson, yeah, I think you have him in there as well, too, as an inactive. So it shouldn't be, it shouldn't be too tough to fill this thing out, assuming all these guys practice again on Friday and all the ones that we expect to play end up dressing on Sunday.
Yeah, and so, Dave, let's talk. Excuse me there. Let's talk a touch about what we expect to see in terms of the Steelers and what they're doing offensively. They come into this game. We know that they've obviously had trouble rushing the ball, and the Eagles' strength is their pass rush. So it's a matchup that I have to say I'm more excited to watch this game as a fan, this Steeler game, than a game I can think of in years, really. And I get excited to watch games. So I just think there are great matchups here, and I think it starts on the offensive side of the ball. The key things, look, everything's a key thing. So, but I think the things that are most interesting are clearly this wide nine technique, and there are nine guys that they're going to run through the defensive front against the Steeler offensive line, and then the corners against our receivers. And you had to love the conversation yesterday where you never hear the Steelers talk trash or talk smack. And Antonio Brown kind of let it go a little bit when he's talking about Brandon Boykin, their third corner, the fourth-round pick out of Georgia, the rookie, who is their nickel corner, calling him candy and stuff like that. I imagine that got you laughing.
Yeah, and that's something, you know, you're seeing the demeanor of Antonio Brown kind of change this season now. You know, he's a starter now. He got his payday. He's a playmaker on offense. I have never been a fan of giving any other team any bulletin board material to put up there. And I'm willing to bet, and I'm not really sure Boykin, I don't think, really understood the candy bar comment. And I know the deeper that you read into some of this, into some of these comments, I'm not sure I fully understand what he meant by calling him a candy bar in that going to eat him up, I guess, is kind of what he's referencing there. But you know what? Let your talking take place on the field. You got to hand it to Boykin, because that's pretty much was his response to the whole thing. You know, when he was asked about it on Thursday by the Eagles media there. So, and you know, calling him a guy that you're going to eat up, when you kind of look at his numbers, he's only given up a 50% completion ratio. He's given up some yards, a lot of them being after the catch there. So, you know, it's not like, now, is this a good matchup for the Steelers and one that they're going to attack? You know, at certain points, I think if it's there, but on top of it, the way they play this press coverage, man coverage on the outside, I think there's going to be some shots for both Brown and Mike Wallace to get free over the top as well, too, assuming the line can protect, in this game. And you mentioned running game to start with. I'm going to give you a bold prediction here, David. I think the Steelers run much better in this game against that wide nine. I think they do it up the gut. I think it's some semblance of split carries between Mendenhall and Redmond and Baron Batch in this game that gets it done as well, too. I'm going to say that the Steelers, this used not to be such a bold statement, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Steelers rush for more than 80 yards in this game.
Okay, that will be a season high, of course. So, Dave, how do you feel about the Steelers' pass protection and you know, what they're going to do in terms of blocking. You think they Heath stays in a fair bit and they go more max protect?
I think you will see that. Trent Cole, I think, commented on that this past week from the Eagles, saying that you know, teams are chipping a lot more on these guys this year. Now, of their, I think they have 7 sacks as a team, the Eagles, which is low for them, based on last year's numbers at this same point. Their defensive ends only have accounted for 4.5 of those sacks thus far. And Cole pretty much said that, hey, we're getting chipped a lot more by the backs and the tight ends. So I would expect that you see the backs do that a lot this game. You know, how much Heath actually stays in, you know, maybe he's going to chip a little and then release. You know, I don't think he's going to be tucked away in the offense. I do think, though, it will limit his production a little bit in this game. Now, of course, they'll use him in the red zone the way they have this entire season. But I think they'll learn a lot on tape from what's happened in this in the first 4 games of the Eagles. And that's, you know, making sure the backs and the tight ends get their licks in on these defensive ends before they're getting out in the flat.
Yep. And so that's on that side of the ball, those are the matchups. And it'll be, for me, it's going to be interesting to watch if the Eagles defensively, they play a lot of man-to-man. If they do that, how they match up the receivers, whether it's Asamoah goes with Antonio Brown or if he goes with Mike Wallace. I mean, that's a difficult decision because of Rodgers Cromartie maybe being a little more physical. Maybe he goes with Mike Wallace. You know, I don't know how they're going to match those guys up or if they care. Maybe they just alternate on side of the field. That would be interesting for me to see. Obviously, Boykin's going to be the slot guy, so that means he's generally going to get Manny Sanders when the Steelers are in the 3-wide set. Dave, do you think the Steelers go with multiple tight end formations a bunch of times, or do you think we'll see less of that and more Chris Rainey type activity?
The tape has shown that their corners do not normally change sides and play matchups. Now, will they in this game? Who knows? But I'm with you. I think Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie draws Mike Wallace more in this game because Mike tends to line up on the left side a little bit more so than Antonio Brown does. As far as the running game and the personnel, I expect a lot of 11 personnel in this game because I think they do want to spread them out. The Eagles kind of dare you to run and want you to run and attack them, and I think the Steelers will try to do that, but I think they'll try to do that with more 11 personnel in this game. Now they do rotate out, you know, those guys on the front there to try to keep them fresh. And as the beat writer, you know, that we had on earlier this week said, you know, trying to catch them with no huddle, really, you know, you might get away with it, you know, for 3 or 4 plays there, but as soon as you have an incomplete pass or a play out of bounds or whatnot, they're going to be shuffling those guys in. So matchup-wise, too, Heath Miller, I think he's going to draw the Coleman safety, I think, at times if the Eagles do not bring in the extra cornerback and play more dime looks in here. So, you know, that's one thing to sort of keep your eye on. I would be surprised if Heath has an overly productive game, as I mentioned. But I don't, you know, Todd Haley talked about Chris Rainey yesterday. And the reason, you know, Rainey hasn't been productive is he sets off such a red light when he enters the game that until they start mixing him up with carries on the offense and getting him more involved in the offense running the football, he's going to continue to be a flashing red light every time he's in the game. So is this the week that we see Rainey more get more carries? Huh? I wish I could answer that one.
That's a great point. And we talked about it at the beginning of the year. And we saw it in the preseason. They ran Rainey between the tackles more than we might have expected, and that's exactly why. And I think that's a good point, Dave. We saw him in the Oakland game, which is the Steelers' last game, feels like a year ago. We saw both Batch and Rainey in the no huddle, and particularly in the second half. And Rainey got a couple carries back-to-back where he gained some yards. And it is that. Darren Sproles needs to be on the field all the time so that he gets that matchup every third play or whatever it is that they're looking for to get him in space. And Darren Sproles has proven he can be an effective runner as well when they give him the opportunity. I'm curious to see how they decide to use Rainey because, look, he's not going to be an effective guy in the NFL if he's on the field once out of every six or seven plays, and they say, okay, we got to put a corner on him, or we got to spy on him, essentially, and you never get him on a linebacker in space. So, yeah, excellent point there.
And considering he has, let's see, six carries for 15 yards, four receptions for another 27 yards in just 28 offensive snaps, and I believe he was targeted one other time than that, that's basically, let's see, five and six. That's 11 touches of the football in 28 snaps. Now, I remember.
And another target gets you 13 or 12, and so, you know, we're getting close to half the time he's on the field.
Yeah, and when you consider one of the times where they did use him effectively was in the game against Denver on the touchdown to Heath Miller when they had the pony backfield back there with Dwyer and Rainey, and they, you know, they shot out each back out to the flat, which stretched out the defense, which allowed Heath Miller, you know, to give that little jerk move in the end zone there for that touchdown in the Broncos game. But, yeah, and until they start mixing him in more in the offense, like, and Darren Sproles is a great example of that, it's going to be hard to kind of hide him unless you change his number every time he's on the sideline. But he's so diminutive that he's easy to pick out there. So, you know, maybe he's not going to be the threat that we thought he was would be early on in the season. Maybe as he gets more carries moving forward, then he'll be a little bit more of a surprise when he hits the field.
Yep. And so then, Dave, let's say at the other side of the ball, with the Eagles, we know the matchups that I would imagine Ike is going to get Deshaun, and we'll see how that matches up. Brent Celek is off to a really good start in the middle of the field, and the Steelers have been vulnerable in the middle of the field. That's something Lawrence Timmons is going to have to be aware of. And, of course, they're going to have to stop McCoy. And there has been a lot talked about in the past 10 days about the Steelers' run defense and not setting the edges and not being as effective. You know, you would think with 2 weeks and a lot to think about here, Ziggy Hood and Brett Kiesel are going to come out, you know, really try to, you know, get this done, because if there's a weakness on this Eagles team, for me, it's very clearly their offensive line.
Yeah, you have to think that, and Woodley talked about stopping the run in the Post-Gazette this morning, and that's a key to the Steelers defense, or the Dick LeBeau defense, I should say, is stop the run first, get these teams in third and long situations, and that's when your pass rush can take over, because if you allow the quarterback in more third and manageable situations, or he's able to make the quick drop and get the ball out quicker. And that's what we've seen so far this season. And when you talk about Shady McCoy, when I can't help but keep – it's etched in my memory from the game against the Giants the other night. There was in the third or fourth quarter, I forget exactly when it was, but he, you know, he's going into the hole in between the tackles there, and the safety comes over from from the side and starts to close that up. He plants that left foot in the ground and just stops on a dime and gives 9 cent change and a very Barry Sanders type cut. The defensive end did a poor job at containing. He sucked inside at that point, and the play goes for 13 or so yards on there. And this is kind of what, you know, when the Steelers face Chris Johnson of the Titans, which they'll do the following week, they want Chris Johnson trying to bounce things outside a lot and running east and west a lot. I think it's just the opposite with McCoy. I think you want McCoy running in between the tackles as opposed to running outside, because I really think that McCoy is one of the top cut type running backs in the league. But, yeah, stopping, you know, forcing Vic into third and long situations is how the Steelers will win this game. And it all starts with stopping LeSean McCoy first. And I'm with you. I think that's going to be the focus of Harrison, of Woodley, of Kiesel, of Hood first and foremost is, hey, plug these gaps and you know, have the contain outside and force this guy to beat you between the tackles.
Yeah, I mean, coming into the game, it's just I talked about it yesterday. I had a couple guys call me and say I sounded like I was loving the Eagles. Look, the reality is there are lots of questions about the Steelers defense, and they start with right now with James Harrison and Troy, excuse me. We just got to see what happens. I mean, we know we've seen this defense and the personnel in this defense play well. We haven't really seen them play well this year. It's that simple. So are they going to reach the level that we know that they've been capable of in the past? And Are you going to see them flying around and getting pressure on Michael Vick and making him have to make quicker decisions? Or are we going to see a defense that can't get off the field on third down, can't get pressure to the quarterback, and occasionally gives out the big play, which, as we've seen so far this year, is a recipe to get beaten? So, I don't know what to say about the Steelers defense other than it's a wait-and-see thing, and Sunday we'll know a lot more.
They have to get off. They have to get off the field on third down. I mean, that Kiesel talked about that on the radio this past week. If you're not doing that, if you're letting Eagles stay in third and manageable situations, especially with the escapability that Michael Vick has, it's going to be a long day, in my opinion. It all starts on first and second down, and keeping them behind the chains. I mean, that's the way this defense is predicated to go. I think they'll be able to do that this week. I don't think sacks are going to be back this week, but I think the pressure alone will be a little bit better. As you mentioned, the Eagles offensive line has had their problems this year at left tackle and at right guard in particular there, and they got the kid Dallas, I can't recall his last name, at center there. I think he's vulnerable too to be pushed on up the gut. So I think if you get, I think sacks is a stat that's kind of overrated heading into this game. Of course, we all like them, and that's a great way to force turnovers. But I think pushing that pocket and getting Vic to bounce outside and try to beat you on the run with his arm instead of scrambling with his legs, I think that's a big part of this game.
Yeah, Dallas Reynolds, the guy who's now going to take over at center for the Eagles. Yep, that is a big part of it, Dave. And, I mean, just look at a game like last night, the pressure that both teams were able to get on those quarterbacks. I mean, they're getting crushed. And you look and say, I mean, I was watching the game thinking that's the kind of stuff we haven't seen out of the Steelers in a while. Obviously a lot of that's you're playing offensive lines that aren't particularly good. But they're bringing heat, and it just changes the nature of the game so dramatically, and we'll see if it happens with the Steelers on Sunday.
And, I posted on Twitter after the game too, and people wonder why left tackles and pass rushing defensive ends go so high, are always commodities in the first round of the draft. And that was evidence of that game last night because, the Cardinals offensive line, wow. It makes the Steelers offensive line up until this point of the season look like five Pro Bowlers on there. Bobby Massey just having a brutal time, and that's a kid I kind of like heading into the draft. At right tackle, there they've of course had injuries at left tackle. The guard play is not good there. They're in for a long season, and the Rams, hey, you got to give the Rams credit though. Boy, that front defensive front of theirs is huge, Bill Parcells, I believe, used to say you either, in that first round of the draft, if you're picking early, you pick a player that can get after the quarterback or a player that can protect the quarterback. And we saw that on display last night. But, pressure is everything, and third down and long is everything in this game. And I think they control – I think Ike Taylor can – you there?
Yep.
Okay, I think Ike Taylor can control DeSean Jackson – on the outside. I'm not a big fan of what Macklin and Avant gives you. I think they can be handled. Brent Celek does scare me, especially in some zone situations, because I think Vic is not afraid to go to him in any situation, more particularly on first and second down. So he's definitely a big factor in this game. But, like I said, the more film that I kind of watch on this moving forward towards the game, the more I like the Steelers' chances in this game.
And Dave, one of the things that just the trickle down effect, having guys back means assuming Sylvester's capable, he'll be on special teams. Maybe Chris Carter gets more work on special teams. They'll have some guys, I'm not sure that you need to be a veteran to play effective special teams, but you have maybe have some better athletes on the field doing things on special teams. So the Steelers' kick coverage not particularly good against Oakland. Somebody was criticizing the special teams so in the paper the other day. It's been good. It has been good except for the kick coverage against Oakland, so I'm not going to rip them right here. But that's just another beneficial effect of getting guys back.
Those two holds on the Antonio Brown return. I've gone back to through the all 52, all 22 of that play. It's hard to pick them up. Now, I'm not going to blame all this on the replacement refs and all like that. It's definitely hard to see still with the all 22 look of that return there. But little things like that and penalties. You know, we haven't talked enough about penalties thus far and how that's kind of really hurt the Steelers, especially in the game against the Oakland, against the Raiders as well, too. So they have to be more disciplined if they keep the penalties down, you know, especially on special teams play. And let's face it, the Eagles have not – they didn't look terribly good on their special teams units the other night against the Giants as well.
Okay, Dave, anything else to hit there, or should we get on to our picks for the week?
We kind of hit on what Todd Haley said about Rainey there. DeCastro, you know, nothing really.
Yeah. That's worth noting. We didn't note that. Yep.
Yeah, he's back riding a bike and filling up refrigerators in the offensive line room and filling the snack box and all like that. And he, you know, he's been attending all the meetings there. So he's not cleared for running yet. So read into that what you will moving forward there. It's been here we are in week five. He can't come back until being on that list for 8 weeks. I'm thinking probably what about week nine, week 10, maybe, you know, whenever he starts running, that's going to be the best sign. In my opinion of when we can expect him back. But a lot of people have been saying, hey, what's going on with DeCastro? I've gotten a few emails on that. So Haley did comment on that yesterday during his talk with the media.
Okay. Did you have a chance to tally up our wins and losses from last week?
No, I have not. But that'll be in the Sunday post.
All right, because I think I'm slowly improving. Not that I had anywhere else to go.
I'll have to. I didn't even look at yours. I didn't look at them combined. And of course, I don't bet every game that I put up on there. I did have a good week with the man for entertainment purposes only.
Wow, you're on a roll.
I have done good, and entertainment purposes only was good to me last night as well, too, in that Rams-Cardinals game as well. So for those listeners, I put up on Twitter my pick, and David let me know his via direct message. Both of us had the Rams plus the points last night, so that was easy. That was a cover. I wouldn't say nothing's easy as far as that goes, but both of us.
Not if you also had USC, it's not.
Oh, okay. I stayed away from that one. But, yeah, let's get into our picks this week, and you walk us through them.
All right, we got the first game, 1 o'clock game, your boys, the Falcons, at Washington. Robert Griffin III has been really good. The Falcons have been great. They lucked into a win last week. Never should have happened. But they're a good team, no question about it. The receivers on that team, they're dynamite. And Washington's been better than I thought. We haven't seen kind of the rookie in Robert RG3. He's been poised. Nice job leading his team to a win late in the game last week. It's Washington at home getting 3. Dave, I'm taking the Falcons. I still think rookie quarterbacks, you know, I like betting against them.
Most definitely in this game. Matt Ryan and Julio Jones evidently was having a hand problem in the last few games, I guess, and evidently that's sorted out there. You know, pick your poison, and correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't Carlos Rogers still play for the Redskins?
He does.
Okay, that's enough. Give me the Falcons and lay the points.
All right, Green Bay goes to Indy, emotional game for Indianapolis without Chuck Pagano. Bruce Arians, his first game as a head coach, and that'll go down in the record books as he being the head coach. So he'll be 1-0 or 0-1 after this week. I think he'll probably be 0-1. Green Bay goes in there. Green Bay's laying 7. I don't know how much emotion plays after you kick the ball off. And I think Indy's good, but I just expect Green Bay to one of these days really put it all together. This game could stay close for a while, but I think it'll be a high-scoring game, and Green Bay wins something like 35-21. So I'll lay the 7.
Green Bay's been giving up some plays on defense and letting teams hang around, you know, in my opinion. You know what? The emotion involved, it's going to be the Colts at home. Greg Jennings and that groin, I think he's going to be down once again this week and for a while for that matter. You know what? I think Green Bay does win this game probably by a field goal or so. So give me Indianapolis. What line are you showing?
7.
Yeah, I'll take the touchdown there and the Colts.
Cleveland's getting 9 in MetLife Stadium going against the Giants. I had to do a poll, you know, a power ranking this week. And I put Cleveland in there somewhere around 25 or 26. I think this is they've had a tough schedule, and they're going to lose this game, but they're going to keep it close. I think they're a better team than people give it credit for. Brandon Whedon, again, another rookie quarterback. Just, it's a learning curve. He can make some of the throws. The Giants secondary is banged up. I think 9's too many, so I'll take the Browns.
I think 9's too – I think the Giants win this game. But I think Cleveland's done some good things. I just think this will be more of maybe the Giants offense struggling just a little bit in this game. So give me Cleveland plus the 9. I think that's too much in this game.
Minnesota, Dave, they host Tennessee. I'll let you go on this one. It's Minnesota's laying 5.5.
Matt Hasselbeck starting in place of Locker. I don't have a good read on Tennessee so far this year. Minnesota, I like what they're doing. I mean, Christian Ponder's doing just enough. Let me just put it to you that way. Percy Harvin's a threat every time he touches the football. I like Minnesota at home to cover this. What are you showing, 5.5?
Yep.
Yeah, give me Minnesota lay the points.
I'll take Tennessee. Just sometimes changing the quarterback, they're a little bit desperate for a win. I'll take the Titans plus 5.5 on the road. Miami goes into Cincinnati. Cincinnati's laying 3. I've thought, you know, I do still think Cincinnati's a bit overrated, but I don't think Miami's good. And they've played some good games. They've played some teams tough. And Tannehill, again, rookie quarterback, he's athletic, he's learning, but that's not nearly enough. I think the Bengals win comfortably.
I disagree with the comfortably. I'm showing 3.5. What are you showing on this?
3.
3? Oh, boy.
You know, I say it every time, by the way, when I say the game.
I know. I'm trying to think through my head. You got to remember, David, I got a 7-second delay in my head. plain and simple, I like what Tannehill's done. I think the Bengals will be a little bit overconfident in this game. Give me Miami plus the points.
All right, Baltimore goes into Kansas City. They're laying 6. What do you want?
Baltimore's all over this. I don't see how the Chiefs are able to keep this close. I think this one's over. Start of the fourth quarter. Give me Baltimore late points.
I'm not going to touch this just because I think Kansas City, if they don't turn it over 5 times every week, they might be competent. But yeah, I'm going to put myself down on the sheet for Baltimore. Carolina hosting Seattle. Seattle's coming east again. This is exactly the scenario they had last week. They're getting 3 this time against Carolina. I good young quarterbacks, but Russell Wilson hasn't been as effective the last couple of weeks. Carolina, after the terrible game they played against the Giants, they were much better last weekend. They lost a game they should have won, though. I maybe see Carolina kind of winning this one by 10 or 14 points, so I'll lay 3.
Wow, you see Carolina winning by that many?
Yeah.
Boy, Seattle's just, their defense is going to keep them in a lot.
Their defense is good, no question.
And I think this is a type team that's going to not allow the explosive play by Cam Newton. I think Cam's going to get really frustrated in this game. I think there's going to be a pick six. There might be 2 defensive touchdowns in this game by Seattle. That will be their best offense, and they can get after the quarterback. Give me Seattle and lay the points.
Chicago goes to Jacksonville, laying 5. What do you want to do?
Was that the real Bears that we saw the other night? I kind of like the direction that this team is moving right now. And I know they're on the road in this game. Give me Chicago, lay the points.
Yeah, I'm laying 5. Jacksonville to me is probably, you know, one of the 2 worst teams in football. I'll lay 5. New England hosting Denver. This is a great game, 4 o'clock game. New England laying 6.5. I'm not sold on Denver. They're clearly a above average NFL team. They're clearly going to win 8 or more games, so that's going to put them right in the playoff picture. Their division, it looks like it's going to be them in San Diego, and then the wild card picture. But I just think New England at home in a game that they're going to be pumped up for. It's a question of, can Von Miller get that kind of penetration in Doomerville? Can they get to Tom Brady? I don't think so. Again, maybe a lot of points scored in this game, but I just don't see people slowing New England down. So I'll lay the 6.5. I like that it's under 7.
What's Peyton Manning's record of the last, 6 or 7 games against New England? They keep flashing it every 5 minutes on on the networks.
Is it good or bad?
It's been good, I believe. Give me, you know what? Denver's going to keep this close. I wouldn't be surprised if Denver wins this game on the road. So give me Denver and Peyton Manning plus the points.
Buffalo's got to go out west. They're getting a ton. They're getting 9.5 to play out there. We saw the Wildcat out of San Francisco last time. This is, again, you know, can Buffalo score points on the road against this defense? And will Buffalo's defense, you know, show up, basically? This is a tough one for me. I'll probably stay away from it. But I guess, you know, Detroit went to San Francisco and Detroit was getting 7 and didn't cover. Buffalo getting 9.5 just doesn't feel like quite enough.
I'm with you. I think Buffalo at least keeps this game close. I mean, you know, maybe they kick a field goal late here and then try for the onside kick or something like that. Give me Buffalo plus the points here.
Okay. San Diego on the Sunday night game goes to New Orleans. New Orleans 0-4. Season on a whatever they call it, a respirator or resuscitator or something.
Their
season's on life support. I don't love it. I think they probably win. 3.5 isn't perfect, but I'll take the Saints.
This is going to be another close game. That's going to come. I think the Saints get their first win, but yeah, I just can't see the Saints stopping you know, some people on defense enough to get, you know, to blow them out or anything. So give me San Diego going down to that loud Superdome plus the points here.
All right, Houston and the Jets on Monday night. I don't know how, you know, this could be the last rites for the Jets. I think I picked them as the 32nd best team in the NFL this week in the power rankings, meaning they're the worst team. And I don't think 8.5 is enough. I think Houston stomps them.
I tell you, when you look at this on paper from every single angle, you think, man, this is a 42-10 game. Something's up here with this line. I think this line should be much more than this. I'm staying away from this game because it scares me. So with that said, give me the Jets plus the points here.
Okay. All right. Well, brings us to the Steelers, and I have wavered on this game. I think if you had asked me on Monday, I'd probably take the Eagles. But I've changed a little bit. I think the Steelers probably contain Michael Vick, and I think Harrison back and what sounds like reasonably healthy. Whether he's effective or not, it's a different question, but Troy back and I think healthy, as I've said, a muscle strain is a different thing, a different animal. We know how to deal with that. Harrison's knee's a more complicated thing. So I expect the Steelers defense to play well. And by play well, I think they hold the Eagles to 17 points every week of the season. I think the Steelers can score more than 20. So I'm going to take them this week and I'm going to take them 24-17.
I like your thinking. Like I said, the closer we get to this game, the more I like it. I think they're going to be able to do some of the things that they haven't been able to do on defense thus far outside of the Jets game. I think offense is going to be able to move the ball, possess the ball fine, good enough in this game. I like the Steelers to cover in this game at home. I'm going to call this one 26-16 in this one.
All right, we're both on the docket for the Steelers going 2-2 after this week.
I was asked this yesterday. Which of the three players that the Steelers are getting back this week, assuming they do, is most important?
I will say that Harrison's most important because he's getting pressure on the quarterback. So I'll go with James.
Depending on the snaps that he plays, that's hard to argue against. I think Troy is important. With what he does, you know, with the confusing. And I think Troy will play a big part in this game with getting inside the head of Michael Vick. But I'm with you. So watch for the injury report later today because, you know, just in case, let's make sure Harrison practices all three days. But everything's lining up in the stars for all these guys to be back this weekend. And, hey, I did some research on this as well, too. Do you know this is the first time since week 13 of last year against the Cincinnati Bengals that the Steelers have had Troy Polamalu, Ryan Clark, James Harrison, and Lamar Woodley all on the field at the same time?
Well, that's good to know. It doesn't seem that long ago, but Yeah, that's, seven games. That's a lot of games playing without your best players.
And we all know what happened in that game. They blew the Bengals out in that game. They had what was it, the 28-1 quarter in the second quarter, I believe, in that game. But, yeah, it was a huge win. So good to have those guys back. And as always, real quick, we got an email here, David. I know we're running short on time here, but we put the call out and somebody answered to it. Huge fan of the work in the podcast. He says lots of great info. Now on to my question. I'm watching some of the better defensive schemes over the past couple of years. He notes Green Bay, Houston, Baltimore, 49ers, etc. I've noticed that these teams move players around a lot. Some examples include Suggs, Matthews, Willis, Justin Smith, Peppers, J.J. Watt, JPP from the Giants. He asked, why doesn't the Steelers do the same with Woodley, Hood, McClendon, Harrison, and Worlds? I would think that moving guys around would confuse the offensive line, allows the defense to probe for matchup advantage. It seems to me like the big reason why they are so predictable. Can the old dog learn new trick here? He thinks it would really improve the pass rush. You want to comment on that?
Well, I think the Steelers do run some stunts. They run, they run that X blitz up the middle at different times. They bring guys off the edge. I think, they like the – you'll see. We'll see what happens with Harrison back. I think that allows them to do more things. We know that teams have been rotating protection towards Woodley, and they won't be able to do that with James on the field as much. So the answer is, I think the Steelers probably do more things than you see. But when you don't see them get to the quarterback, they don't stop and show you on the telestrator exactly what they did and how they got there. So I think they're running some of these things that you're talking about. But at the end of the day, the guy's got it's mano a mano. The guy's got to win his battle, and the Steelers just haven't been winning enough battles.
Yeah, and the Steelers do move guys around occasionally. Now you're not going to see Lamar Woodley on the right side or James Harrison completely on the left side. A few times we've seen Harrison, they'll stand up and they'll muddle around there at the line of scrimmage and all like that. But usually the Steelers like to keep these guys in their positions and on the sides that they play. He mentions in particular about putting Woodley over on and attacking the left tackle. You're not going to see that type of stuff with LeBeau. One thing to keep in mind too, as far as the pass rush goes, this email was from John. The Steelers haven't done good at keeping teams behind the chains on third down as well too. And unless you have a team in a predictable situation, it's hard to mix things up and send an extra guy or send a safety or send a corner, because it's easily to dissect on a second and short or a third and short type situation there. So, if they're able to get a better handle and keep teams behind the chains more, I think you'll see a little bit more exotic stuff, as far as some moving around, standing up on a defensive line and sending guys from different positions. So I hope that gives you our perspective and somewhat of a semblance of an answer to your question, John, and we appreciate that. And as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. If you want to email the show like John did, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We'll have content up on Steelers Depot all leading up to game time. You can listen to David's show today on ESPN 970 and the pregame show in the morning as well, too, on Sunday. Make sure you're listening to that on ESPN 970 as well.
Yep, we'll be on I'll be on 9 to 11, and Dave will be with me about 9:15 for a quick look at looking at Steelers Eagles. So, thanks for everything, and always thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.